Okay, this is the inaugural shiur of Sheni Shmuel on the Parshios HaShavua. And again, as we typically do, let's just open with a little bit of biographical information. The Sheni Shmuel was in Shmuel Bornstein, the Tzokot Shavu Rebbe, born in 1855 and died in 1926. So we're talking about someone who lived less than 100 years ago. In fact, it's interesting, some of the Torahs that we're going to see tonight are from literally exactly 100 years ago. The Sefer Sheni Shmuel, which was published posthumously by the Tzokot Shavu's son and successor, David Bornstein, is arranged like the Sfas Emes. If you've ever learned Sfas Emes, so the Sheni Shmuel is arranged according to the Parshios HaShavua, as well as on the Moadim, as well as on Haggadah Shel Pesach. But as opposed to being a running commentary on the Psukim, the Torahs are arranged by year. Right, again, if you learn Sfas Emes, so Sfas Emes is arranged the same way, because the Sfas Emes as well is basically the notes of the various Shmuzin and Droshes that the Sfas Emes gave. And because it was written up posthumously and the author didn't have the benefit of editing his own work, basically this is the notes of Reb Shmuel Bornstein, you know, what he said in 1910, what he said in 1911, what he said in 1912. And again, you know, the arrangement is more by year than it is by a running commentary. Shmuel Bornstein, the Sheni Shmuel, came from incredible yichus. His maternal grandfather was the Kovsky Rebbe, Nachum Mendel of Morgenstern. Kovsky Rebbe, of course, we know was one of the giants of Hasidus, whose hallmark was a commitment to emes, you know, to absolute truth, even when it hurt. You know, he said it like it was, basically. The Kotzker's son-in-law, Rabbi Avram Bornstein, was the Sheni Shmuel's father. Rabbi Avram Bornstein is well known in the Torah world as the author of the Avnei Nezer, the multi-volume Shailos Utshuvos, which, you know, are a standard part of the yeshiva curriculum to this day. Also the author of the Sefer Egli Tal, a little bit less well known, but also a very famous Sefer. The Egli Tal is a very important discussion of the first 11 Malachos in Hilchos Shabbos, a very standard reference Sefer when dealing with Hilchos Shabbos. The Sheni Shmuel was the one who arranged the tshuvas of the Avnei Nezer and prepared them for publication. So, you know, even though the style of the Sheni Shmuel, as we're going to see going through it, is more of an agadic style. In other words, you know, he's focusing on Midrashim and Hasidus and the like. Don't be fooled. You know, the Sheni Shmuel was a classic Talmud Chacham in the classic sense of the term. In other words, anyone who arranged, you know, the Avnei Nezer clearly, you know, was holding in Shas and Poskim as much as he was holding in Midrashim and Zohar and Hasidus and the like. Basically, Reb Shmuel Bornstein, the Sheni Shmuel, was an unusually close Talmud of his father. Even after he got married, where the custom in Europe was that when you got married, you would move in with your in-laws. Reb Shmuel Bornstein moved in with his parents. In other words, in his married life, he continued living with his parents. You know, I guess like a, you know, an adjacent apartment or something like that. He learned extensively by his father, and, you know, really, you know, was not just a son, but really was a Talmud in the fullest sense of the term, continuing on his father's legacy. His father passed away, the Avnei Nezer passed away in 1910, and it was in that year that the Sheni Shmuel, without question, succeeded his father as the Tzokot Shavu Rebbe. And again, you know, he himself died in 1926. I mean, basically, he served as Rebbe for 15 years, from the age of 55 till he passed away at the age of 70. 70 is not exceedingly young, but you know, even in 1926, it wasn't exceedingly old either. Basically, the impression one gets is that he really worked very, very hard in his capacity as a Chassidish Rebbe. he was displaced during the First World War. They had to move the Hasidus to a different location, and it seems that just his myriad of responsibilities took its toll on his health. And again, you know, in 1926, to pass away at the age of 70 was still considered to be, you know, somewhat on the young side, relatively speaking. No, the Sokachev Rebbe, both. Yeah, yeah, the Kosker was his grandfather.
So both. Why isn't he called after his grandfather?
No, so the
They moved,
right. You know, they kept moving around from place to place. So the father already had settled in Sokachev and really, you know, created his Hasidus here. Right, you know, so they took over the Sokachev Hasidus. A year after his father passed away, Shmuel Bornstein, the Shemi Shmuel, put together a yeshiva. You know, so again, he was certainly devoted to the notion of traditional learning and everything that entailed. That's an interesting tidbit as well.
Is there a strong influence of the Kotzkus Mahalach in the Old Dominator and the Sukkot?
Right. So what we're going to see a little bit tonight, the question is there a strong influence of the Kotzkus Mahalach in the Shemi Shmuel? We will see that he quotes his father and his grandfather a lot. I think we'll even see a little bit of that tonight. And certainly that commitment to absolute emes is something which, you know, is very much a hallmark of the Sukkotshover, as it was the hallmark of his grandfather. So what I really want to see tonight really is two things. First of all, I want to start with a short vort from the Shemi Shmuel. This way, even if we don't make it all the way to the end, at least we'll get one Dover Shalom, you know, one full thing out of the discussion tonight. And then I want to see something which struck me, at least, as being very fascinating, the evolution of an idea from year to year. It's very dangerous to talk about evolution, Parshas Bereishis, but we're not talking about scientific evolution over here. But because the Sukkotshover's Torahs are labeled by year, and like all good Rabbanim, he came back to his favorite themes year after year, there's one theme in particular which is treated in three different years in the Sukkotshover's Torahs on Parshas Bereishis. And I think, Lanius Daiti, every successive presentation is a little bit different. And I think noticing those differences, I think, is you know, somewhat substantial, somewhat substantive, you know, an interesting idea. But first the short vort. Right, we'll start again. We'll see something which the Sukkotshover likes to do. He bases himself very much on Midrashim. This is from the very end of Parshas Bereishis. The Noach Motzochein Be'enei Hashem. Right? The very, very end of Parshas Bereishis. The whole world was corrupt, but Noach found favor in the eyes of God. Menrish Rabbah writes, Amr Ab Abba Bar Kahana, Kinichamti Ki Asisim V'Noach. Right? If you read the Psukim without the Sof Pasuk, Hashem says at the end of Parshas Bereishis, I'm going to destroy mankind, Kinichamti Ki Asisim, because I regret, so to speak, having made human beings. Now, the way it appears in our Chumashim is period. New sentence, V'Noach Motzochein Be'enei Hashem. And Noach found favor in the eyes of God. Says Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, take out the period. Ki nichamti ki asisim v'noach. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I regret having made human beings, and I regret having made Noach. That's the Medrash. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not such a big fan of Noach either. And says the Medrash, Afilu Noach shenishayir mehem lo hayo kedai. Even Noach really did not deserve to be saved. Elo shemotzachein be'enei Hashem. Says the Medrash, you know why Noach was saved? Noach, it says in the Pesuk, Noach motzachein be'enei Hashem. God liked him. So, in other words, the way we usually interpret that is Noach motzachein be'enei Hashem because he was a good person. He was a tzaddik. Says the Medrash, no, that's not what it means. Noach motzachein be'enei Hashem means the Kodesh Baruch looked down and said, okay, yeah, he's a nice fellow. Yeah, let's save him. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, let's throw Noach a bone, so to speak. So, Shem Yishuel quotes this, and he says, Lohavim heach shaykh lomar she'eno kedai, ad shenicham Hashem Yisbarach gam olov. You're telling me that the Ribbono Shel Olam really, you know, strictly speaking, would have destroyed Noach as well? It was an act of Rachmanis that he preserved Noach? Right? The pasuk says about Noach, tzaddik tamim haya b'darosov. He was a perfect tzaddik. Okay, so you'll tell me, you know, the famous Maimer Chazal, you know, b'darosov, darshan l'shvach, darshan l'gnai. Okay, so but you're telling me that this medrash is assuming that Noach was not such a big tzaddik? You know, that this Noach is this medrash rather is taking sides in that great dispute between the Chachamim? Maybe, but it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like the medrash is saying, fundamentally speaking, however you slice it, whether Noach was relatively speaking a tzaddik or objectively speaking a tzaddik, it sounds like that really God would have destroyed him had it not been for the special rachmanis that the Ribbono Shel Olam had on him. How are you talking? How do you understand that? Says the Safed Shofar. So he quotes another medrash later on in Parshas Noach, where the medrash depicts Noach as saying as follows: Yisayev Hashem she'enam lo chayim v'lo nidonim, va'ani kasher osu kein osisi. The medrash puts these words in the mouth of Noach: whatever they did, I did as well. What's the difference between me and them? Ribbono Shel Olam, there is no difference between me and them, says Noach about the Dor HaMabul. It's just that you, Ribbono Shel Olam, were gracious to me and you afforded me this opportunity to escape in the Teva. For who Yosir Pliya, says the Sakat Shofet. This medrash is even harder to understand than the first medrash. Shlomotza ba'atzmo hefresh beino levein dor amabu. Noach said about himself, ma beini leveinom. What's the difference between me and them? I mean, Noach, modesty is fine, but, you know, it seems a little bit out of touch with reality. You don't see any difference between you and the rest of the dor amabu? So says the Sakat Shofar as follows, a beautiful voice. V'nira kavonas hadvarim, de be'emes kol echad ve'echad, l'fi ma'ilas nafsho, u'l'fi achanoso mitoldoso, u'l'fi ma shesipek biyodo lasos, hutzarech laharbos ba'avodas Hashem. Your mission as an Oved Hashem, says the Sakat Shofar, is unique to you. And the better background that you have, and the more elevated a neshama that you have, and the more opportunities you have, it means the greater demands the Ribbono Shel Olam places on you as your mission. Right? Nobody is born in a situation where they don't have to work hard in Avodas Hashem. If God gave you kishronos, it means you have to work that much harder. If God brought you into a background where you're able to shteig better, it means that more is going to be demanded of you as a result. And indeed, you know, he quotes the famous Gemara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu medakdek im svivav kechut ha-saira, the Ribbono Shel Olam holds its tzaddikim to a very high standard. Why? It doesn't seem fair. The answer, says the Sakat Shofar, is that what God demands of every person is relative to that person. A person who's born into a situation where he's surrounded by, let's say, crime and the like, and that person makes the decision to, you know, to not steal, or to not steal as much, for that person, that's a big madrega. But the person who's born into an environment of Torah and mitzvahs and says, I'm not going to steal, so that's not such a big madrega. Right? You know, everyone is judged in accordance with, you know, what they can possibly achieve, what their potential is. The Al-Kain, Noach Shehoysa Nafsho Givoa Ma'od, Vahoysa Hachanosu Mitolda Tova, Noach had an exalted neshama, and he came from a beautiful background. And God was with him. You know, God was supporting him as he went through life. He had a lot of things going for him, Noach. As much as Noach achieved, Noach was honest enough with himself to know that he could be achieving a lot more. And that whatever he, you know, had accomplished, okay, he was great relative to the people in his generation, but relative to himself, he could be achieving a lot more. Now, this is subtly different than the famous, you know, Chazal that Rashi quotes at the beginning of Parshas Noach, that Yesh Dorshin L'Gnai, right? That there are those who say that Noach, B'Dorosov HaYetzadik, Ilu Hayu B'Dorosh Shel Avram Lo Hayu Nechshav L'Klum. You know, the idea that had Noach been around in the time of Avram, he wouldn't have been so great. It's not, that's also holding Noah to a relative standard. In other words, relative to the to his times, he was a tzaddik, but not necessarily in the times of Avram. But here the Sakhachar is saying something different. Forget about relative to his generation or Avram's generation. Relative to his potential, Noah felt that he wasn't everything that he could be. That's what Noach means. I'm no different than them. I know, objectively speaking, you know, they're committing all these crimes. You know, they're stealing and they're engaging in Gilead riots and they're doing this and they're doing that. I know that they're doing that and I'm not doing that. I get that. But relative to what they could be doing, and relative to what I could be doing, I'm not sure that I'm that much ahead of them, if at all, in terms of the fulfillment of my potential. Kasher asu kein asah. So in other words, he holds himself, you know, he says, I don't know that in terms of the fulfillment of my potential, if I'm such a great madrega. Now, again, Sakhachov is a chassidusha, right? Chassidusha Rebbe. This calls to mind, of course, to me at least, the famous story with the Rebbe Reb Zisha on his deathbed, right? The Rebbe Reb Zisha is on his deathbed, he's crying, and Chassidim say, Rebbe, why are you crying? So the Rebbe Reb Zisha says, when I get up there, they're not going to ask me, you know, why weren't you like Moshe Rabbeinu? Why weren't you like Avraham Avinu? They're going to ask me, why weren't you like Zisha? And to that, I won't have a teretz. Meaning what? Meaning that the Rebbe Reb Zisha is saying, I'm judged based on to the extent to which I fulfill my potential. So Noach also says, I don't know that I'm fulfilling my potential. So in that sense, it's a rachmanus that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam decided to save me, because on that level, I'm not really sure that I'm that different than everybody else out there who's drowning. You must be a chassid deep down, right? Maybe not even so deep down. The Sakhachov is as follows. Uvishvil ze atzma, because of this very trait of Noach. Now listen to these next words. Shlohona es atzma, because he didn't fool himself. Velo hisbarech bilavavo, and he didn't pat himself on the back. Right? Now Noach could have said, look at me, I'm the greatest tzaddik alive. I mean, God decided to save me. I'm the greatest tzaddik alive. I'm the only one alive, pretty much, right? He could have patted himself on the back and said, "Well, I'm awesome, you know. I'm better than everybody else, right?" But because he didn't fool himself, Shlohona es atzmo, Elohaya davek b'midas ha'emes, and he clung to the attribute of truth. Kasher kein hi ha'emes l'fi milas nafsho, because again, relative to whom he could be, He was truthful with himself. Because of that, matzochein be'enei Hashem. In other words, you now go back and the Sakhachov is now addressing the question. Okay, if it's really true that people are judged based on their potential and not necessarily based on where they're holding objectively, so, you know, stupid question. So why Taka was not saved? I mean, if he's right that, you know, in terms of his potential, he's no better than anybody else. If he's really right about that, so how come the Rebbeinu Shel Olam invited him into the table? So why did not come to Shmaruch and drown him with everybody else? Answers the Sakhachov, because at least he was honest with himself. And if you're honest with yourself, you know who you are, Matzlachein be'enei Hashem. That causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu to love him. Right? Not because of his tzidkus, because his tzidkus, relatively speaking, wasn't, you know, he wasn't on the madriga that he could have been, but he was honest with himself. Those lines in the Sakat Shava, that's the Zayda speaking. That's the Koska, right? He doesn't quote the Koska, but, you know, that Midas HaEmes, you know, that sense that Noach was saved because he was, you know, he was intellectually honest with himself, that's vintage Kosk, you know, right there.
Just focusing on the time that he has on himself, but without his potential. The generation that he lived in, I mean, from who could he learn to become better? How? What tzvi did he have? His feathers did he have? I'm saying, wasn't he being unrealistic about his potential? I mean, a person can grow. The person was in that place was in Cheyenne, Wyoming, no base manager over there. You're all by yourself, and you're all surrounded by cattle, and whatever it is, and whatever it is, pointing shoes and stuff. How can you box size? You have to be realistic. But if I go to a place, I live in New York, and it's potential, and I don't use it, it's a man, I can have a time on myself. But once you have the time on yourself, realistically speaking, there were no opportunities for him to become better than he was. So like, why is he being unrealistically tough on himself?
Right, so the way the Sakat Shava presents it, and again, you know, I wasn't there with Noach, so I don't really know, but the way the Sakat Shava presents it is that Noach had a lot going for him even before the Mabul. In other words, I think, you know, when we read the story of the Mabul sort of as kids, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of appears out of nowhere and says to Noach, hey, by the way, hey, Shalom Aleichem, I'm the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm bringing a Mabul. It's nice to meet you. Would you like, you know, I think it would be a good idea for you to build a Teva. Right? I think that's how we read the story. You know, what was Noach's first encounter with the Ribono Shel Olam? Right? The way the Sakat Shava reads it, and the truth is, it fits into the psukim. Eto Elokim Hisalich Noach comes before any discussion about the Mabul, which means, the way the Sakat Shava takes it to mean, Noach had an ongoing relationship with Hashem far before there was any discussion about a Mabul. We certainly know that he built the Teva 100 years before the Mabul. Right? So in other words, for 100 years he had it. But I think the Sakat Shava is saying differently. In other words, even before the 100 years before the Mabul, again, when it started, I don't know. But Eto Elokim Hisalich Noach is one of the first things we know about Noach, even before there's any discussion about a Mabul. So Eto Elokim Hisalich Noach doesn't just mean he was a God-fearing person, it was a Yari Shomai. No, it means he communicated with the Ribono Shel Olam. He had an ongoing relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, you know, it's not exactly like being out in Wyoming with the cattle. I mean, the best medrash is Shifti Beveis Hashem, right? In other words, he's in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam, whatever that means. I don't know what it means exactly, but you know, he's coming with a great deal of background, you know, even before the Mabul comes on the scene. So again, the medrash says, and you know, the Sakat Shava assumes that the medrash is on the money. Right, that Noach said about himself, in terms of the fulfillment of my potential, I'm really no different than anybody else. Right, you know, I could be drowning out there as well in terms of who I'm at. But it's that midas ha'emes that saves Noach in the end of the day. I think it's an amazing, you know, it's an amazing interpretation. And again, the chosam of Kotsk, you know, the seal of Kotsk is so on this vort, you know, in such a powerful fashion. Yeah.
Why does Hashem have a relationship with Noach?
Right, so it sounds like Noach must have somehow discovered Hashem on his own, you know. Because again, you know, for Hashem to just kind of pick Noach out of a hat doesn't seem reasonable, you know. Eso Elokim Hisalich Noach means Noach worked on himself and got to the Madrega where he was able to commune with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet, when he was on that Madrega, he said, "But I know I fulfilled a fraction of what I'm able to fulfill." Right? But at least you're honest. That's the Sakat Shava says. At least you're honest.
You see a similar version of Chanoch.
Right. Right.
It's all the kids. It seems like you don't see that anybody with any other people in Tanakh, no? This expression of being holy for Hashem. Only Chanoch and Noah.
Right. So, again, whatever that means exactly, it sounds like the person, as a young man, reached out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and rose to some kind of madrega of Nevius. I mean, that's what it sounds like. Whatever that means exactly, you know, they were able to forge a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the short vort. Well, it's so short. But that's the short vort. That's what I said. We've got to start with the short one tonight just to, you know, sort of get things rolling. There are a number, I think three times, where the Sakad Shavar focuses on the following concept, and you see, I think, you know, the concept and his presentation of the concept seems to develop a little bit from year to year. This is from Tav Resh Ayin Aleph, what I'm about to say. First of all, the vort we just said is from Tav Resh Ayin Aleph, which is 1911, right? So this is a year after he assumed the position of Rebbe. And the vort I'm about to say is also from Tav Resh Ayin Aleph. He quotes them. This is about the punishment of Adam HaRishon. We're going to focus the rest of the shiur on the punishment of Adam HaRishon and his being driven out of Gan Eden. So he quotes the Medrash. The Medrash says that Adam HaRishon sinned on Erev Shabbos, right? In other words, Adam HaRishon was created on Erev Shabbos, he sinned on Erev Shabbos, right? And he was, says the Medrash, at least according to one opinion, he was driven out of Gan Eden on Motzei Shabbos. Right? He was driven out of Gan Eden on Motzei Shabbos. Now, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu drive him out of Gan Eden? So if you look in the Psukim, let's get a Chumash. Read it inside. Says at the end of Perek Gimel, "Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Hein ha'odom hoya ka'achad mimenu la'da'as tova ra, v'ato pen yishlach yodo, v'lokach gam eitz ha'chayim v'ochal v'chay le'olam." Gee, we got a problem over here. Man already ate from the eitz hadas, and that didn't work out so well. Now, he might eat from the other tree, the eitz ha'chayim, and the Eitz HaChayim is going to cause him to live forever. So it will be an antidote to the punishment which I gave him. The Rabban Shalom says, I gave him a punishment that he's going to die, he's going to be mortal. If he eats from the Eitz HaChayim, he'll become immortal. So we better solve this right away. So as a result, the next pasuk says, Vayishalcheyu Hashem Elokim Migan Eden, God sends him away from Gan Eden, Vayigoresh Es HaOdom, and he drives him out. Right? That's the way the Psukim go. Shem Yishmuel quotes a kasha from the Yafei Toar. The Yafei Toar was Rabbi Shmuel Yafei Ashkenazi, who lived in the 1500s and wrote a commentary on the Medrash Rabbah. And the Yafei Toar asks as follows. So let's get the chronology straight over here. He sins on Erev Shabbos. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you know, we got a problem. He may eat from the Eitz HaChayim, so we better throw him out of Gan Eden, and, you know, lest he come to do that. So when does he get thrown out of Gan Eden? Motzei Shabbos. More than 24 hours later. Says the Yafei Toar, why do we throw him out of Gan Eden right away? Right? I mean, you're worried that he's going to go over and eat from the Eitz HaChayim. It didn't take him long to eat from the Eitz HaDas. Right? He was created on that same day, and on that same day, on Friday, he ate from the Eitz HaDas. So you're worried now that he's going to eat from the Eitz HaChayim. You know what? This is a very big problem. Let's call a board meeting, and we'll discuss it. Right? If you're worried that he's going to eat from the Eitz HaChayim, throw him out of that right away. What are you wasting any time? You wait till Motzei Shabbos? What are you worried? You know, that he won't have a place to go for Shabbos? I mean, Taka Tzur, maybe he didn't have a place to go for Shabbos. Right? Why is he waiting? I mean, if you're so worried, why are you waiting till Motzei Shabbos to throw him out? So in 1911, when the Rebbe asked this kasha, he basically says as follows, Ach nireh After Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, he was filled up with all kinds of evil and negative forces. Right? You could definitely appreciate that that would happen. However, he says, let's just read the Lashon. After he was driven out and he received his punishment by being driven out, that actually, you know, served as something of a kapara, and it dulled some of these evil forces that that went into him. On Shabbos, these evil forces that went into Adam HaRishon subsided. Right, those who say Kegavna on Leil Shabbos will recognize this phrase. Right, all of those evil forces are uprooted and driven out from the person. Right, umi Adam HaRishon be'atzma lahoya shum cheshash, tohu be'atzma lahoya rotza la'avor es pi Hashem. We know that once this ruach shtus, if you will, was driven out from Adam HaRishon, he himself certainly would not have wanted to go against the rotzen Hashem. And explains the Shem Yishmoel, the Rebbeinu Shalom felt confident that he could keep Adam HaRishon and Gan Eden over Shabbos, because on Shabbos, you know, Adam HaRishon would be brought back to his previous state of Kedusha, at least to an extent, and he would feel confident that Adam HaRishon would not take from the Eitz HaChayim over the course of Shabbos. The minute Shabbos was over, so Adam HaRishon would go back into that state of Kochos HaTumah which he had acquired prior to Shabbos, and that's why Motzei Shabbos came, it was imperative to drive him out first thing. That's the in 1911, that's the teretz that the Shem Yishmoel gives to the Yafei Torah as Kasha. Again, just to summarize, why wasn't Adam HaRishon driven out immediately after the Chet on Erev Shabbos, you know, lest he take from the Eitz HaChayim? Answers the Shem Yishmoel, the Rebbeinu Shalom was absolutely confident that whatever poor forces and evil forces Adam HaRishon had absorbed him to himself through the eating of the Eitz HaDas, those would be suspended over the course of Shabbos. He knew that the Eitz HaChayim wouldn't be touched over Shabbos, but came up to Shabbos, so Adam HaRishon had to be driven out. What's the take home lesson, so to speak? And as if you're a Rebbe and giving this over, not just as Torah, but as instruction, the take home lesson, if you will, is look at the Koach of Shabbos, right? And as the Rebbeinu Shalom was so afraid that Adam HaRishon was going to do the wrong thing and eat from the Eitz HaChayim, but the Rebbeinu Shalom was absolutely confident that that was not going to happen over the course of Shabbos. Right? That's the take-home lesson, so to speak, is the gadlus of Shabbos to take even a sinner and to, you know, to purify him at least to an extent.
Isn't that funny that, look, originally the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted Zev to eat the Eitz HaDas on Shabbos. He saved the Eitz HaDas on Shabbos.
I mean, the Eitz HaChayim.
The Eitz HaDas,
right. Right.
Just wait another few hours, he'll get it on Shabbos, he'll eat it then.
Right.
So I'm saying now, it's funny that the Rebbeinu Shalom had that designated for the side of Shabbos. So, what I'm saying, no, so he messed up the Eitz HaDas, he didn't eat that on Shabbos. So maybe Eitz HaChayim, you will be moving on Shabbos. Maybe that will be designated for Shabbos. In other words, if not one, then I'll have the other.
Right, but I don't think it's just like, you know, this fruit, that fruit. In other words, each eighth had its own function, part of what we're going to discuss actually in the upcoming, you know, comments of the Shem Yishmoel. And even according to that concept that the Eitz HaDas, you know, should have been preserved for Shabbos, which ultimately goes back to a tradition from the Arizal, that whatever the problem of Adam HaRishon was, is that he jumped the gun on something, as opposed to, you know, it's not the act itself, it's the fact that he did the act too early. that cheshbon, whatever it is not really relevant to the Eitz HaChaim. The Eitz HaChaim is not supposed to be eaten at this point at all. Why not? I mean, we'll talk about that in a little bit, Bez Hashem. Yeah.
Where does Hashem tell Adam that he came from the Eitz HaChaim?
Oh, Gevaldik. Okay, so where does that command even exist? Right. So hold that question. We'll talk about that in the later installments. This is what the Sefer Shavuot says in 1911. Speaking about this idea of, you know, not eating from the Eitz HaChaim, the power of Shabbos to hold Adam HaRishon back to not eat from the Eitz HaChaim over Shabbos. But again, as we can see, a lot of questions are, you know, still left dangling, you know, in terms of the Pshat. We move forward to Tafresh Ayin Gimel. And in 1913, he also deals with this, you know, issue of Adam HaRishon being driven out of Gan Eden, and he's going to come back to this Yifei Toar, but he introduces the following idea. If you look in the psukim we just read, it says twice that Adam HaRishon was driven out of Gan Eden, if you read them carefully. Right? Vayishalcheyu Hashem Elokim migan Eden, la'avodesu Adam asher lukach misham, God sends him out of Gan Eden, and then the next pasuk says, vayigoresh es ha'adam, he drove out man, and the Ribbono Shel Olam places Kruvim with a sword of some sort to keep Adam out from going back into Gan Eden. The Yesh L'daktik asks the Shem Yishmuel, Ki achar shekosa vayishalcheyu chazar v'kosa vayigoresh v'haynu hach. The second pasuk is repetitive. Vayishalcheyu Hashem Elokim migan Eden. Vayigoresh es ha'adam. Basically it says the same thing twice. God sent him out of Gan Eden. He drove out man. We know that he drove out man. That's what it says, Vayishalcheyu migan Eden. So why do you have to say the second time, Vayigoresh es ha'adam? So he quotes a Tana Devei Eliyahu. The Tana Devei Eliyahu says, Vayigoresh es ha'adam is a lashon of gerushin, of divorce. We know that Vayigoresh literally means he drove out, right? But we know that the term that Chazal use for divorce is gerushin, right? So the first one means Vayishalcheyu, he physically drove him out, and then Vayigoresh es ha'adam means he divorced him. Okay, what does that mean? You know, what exactly does that mean? V'nira. So he quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer. Dinei kvod kedushas avi admar zeichet tzadik livrach l'chaye olam abav piresh divrei atana devei Eliyahu shenosan lo gerushim ki isho. What does the Tana Devei Eliyahu mean? That God divorced Adam HaRishon? Hainu ki gerushe isho grusha. No, it's an interesting thing about divorce, says the Avnei Nezer. Even though the term in Hebrew for a divorcee is a grusha, a man can be with his divorced wife together in a room, right? Assuming it's not a yichud problem, right? Right? They go to the Beis Din to have the get, you know, executed, and they walk out of the Beis Din room. And they're divorced, but she's not thrown out, right? She's still in the house together with him. So what does it mean that she's megureshes, right? So it says the Avnei Nezer, mikol makom nikres grusha, lashon grusha hu shenifsak hachibur shebeino levein baila. Grusha doesn't mean that she's physically displaced. It means that the relationship between the two of them is severed. The chibur between the two of them is broken up. They can be physically in the same place, but she's still called a grusha because there's no longer any kind of chibur, any kind of relationship, any kind of legal relationship that exists between the two of them. So that says the Avnei Nezer is what the pasuk means over here. Vayishalcheyu Hashem Elokim migan Eden. The Ribbono Shel Olam said to Adam Arishon and to Chava, pack your bags and go. That's the first pasuk. Vayigarish es ha'adam, says the Avnei Nezer. What that means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu severed a degree of the connection between himself and Adam HaRishon. He entered into a state of gerushin, so to speak, with Adam HaRishon. Right? Now, that's the Avnei Nezer, that's the Sakhar Shav recording his father, the Avnei Nezer, which again, we pointed out before, he was mamish, like a Talmud, a chassid of his father, and he concludes this vort from his father with the words, V'deripi chacham chen, right? These are, he hit it on the mark, the Tata hit it on the mark, you know, when he said, V'yigar sha'ez ha'adam, means that he severed the connection, but it still begs the question, what exactly is the role of God severing the connection between himself and Adam HaRishon?
Does that include mankind and womankind?
Yeah.
No. And that women have a more of a stronger connection with the
Rebbeinu Shel Tzion. No. You know, human beings now no longer have the same kind of tight connection with God that they had prior to the Chet. So he says as follows. That was the following idea. Hinehu Arizal Maksha. Halolo Hegla Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael Avein HaUmos Ela Kadesh Yitzfasu Aleim Geirim. The Gemara says that the reason the Ribbono Shel Olam sent Klal Yisrael into Golos was for us to bring Geirim. Right? If we're in India, you know, we're in America, wherever we are, we can find non-Jewish souls and bring them back to Yiddishkeit. That's the Gemara says, that's one of the reasons that God sent us into Golos. So he says the Sakhar Shav, so frek the Arizal, so wait a minute. So what would have happened if we would have done, if we would have behaved and not been sent into Golos? Right? So it seems a little bit odd. Because we misbehaved, we get sent all over the world, and Baruch Hashem, we're able to make all these Geirim. But had we done what we were supposed to do and stayed in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash and all of that, so then we wouldn't have made any Geirim. And, you know, all of these non-Jewish people would have stayed non-Jewish, and they never would have come to Yiddishkeit.
That's not what Rashi says.
Right. Right. So, but I guess, in other words, yeah, you have here and there a couple of people who would make their way to Eretz Yisrael and be Megaya, but, you know, clearly, when the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu scattered Klal Yisrael throughout the world, you know, in order to create Geirim, it sounds like that was an effective way of doing it. Because had we not been scattered, you know, we wouldn't have gotten as much bang for our buck, you know, in terms of making Geirim. So it was a good thing we went into Golos? Like, so had we behaved, there would be no Geirim, or there'd be few Geirim, or whatever? How do you understand this? So the Arizal answered as follows, says the Sakhar Shav. Had we behaved, had we not gone into Golos, we would have had so much koach staying in Eretz Yisrael that we would have drawn the nations of the world to Yiddishkeit like a magnet. Right? Now that we sinned, we have to go out there to pick up the nitzotzos hakedusha that are all over the world and bring them back to Yiddishkeit. Had we been on a higher madrega, not going into Golos, we wouldn't have to go out. They would have come to us, like Rashi says about a couple of people. Who, you know, in the Zos HaBracha, you know, the people who came, you know, they were inspired, they did business with Zvulun, and then they said, hey, once we're here already, let's go to Beis HaMikdash and check it out, right? That's a miut. But had we really behaved and done the right thing, the world would have come streaming to Eretz Yisrael and would have embraced Yiddishkeit in that way. We wouldn't have to go out to them, they would have come to us. Either way, the role of Klal Yisrael is to draw in the Kedusha. The Shaila is, can we draw in the Kedusha by saying put? Or do we have to go out there, you know, to find the Kedusha and bring it out? Right? It's the Sakhar Shav. So you'll ask me, why am I bringing in this Arizal about the Golos of Klal Yisrael? So says the Sakhar Shav, if you look in the Midrashim compare Vayigaresh es ha'adam, man being driven out of Gan Eden to the Golos of Klal Yisrael. Right? In other words, man going out of Gan Eden is the forerunner, in a sense, of the whole idea of Klal Yisrael going into Golos. And just like Klal Yisrael going into Golos, you know, on the most basic of levels is a bad thing, but there's a silver lining to Klal Yisrael going into Golos, because after all, when we go into Golos, we now you know, are picking up the Nitzosos HaKadusha from the whole world and bringing them back to Yiddishkeit. We have a role to play even in Golos. So too, says the Sakhachava, when the Ribbono Shel Olam drove men out of Gan Eden, it was not just simply a punishment, it was the redefinition of his mission. When he was in Gan Eden before the Chet, his mission was to build up Gan Eden as a place of Kedusha that would raise up the entire world. Now that he sinned, he was no longer on that Madrega. But God wasn't just throwing him out and saying, hey, you're worthless, I don't care about you. God was saying, we've got to redefine your mission now. Now you've got to leave Gan Eden, go out there into the world, and somehow find the Kedusha that's out there and raise it up. Right? He says, it's very interesting, if you look in the Pasuk, the Pasuk says, Vayishalcheyu Hashem Elokim Migan Eden La'avod es ho'adamo asher lukach misham. God sent him out of Gan Eden to work the ground from which he had come. What do you mean he sent him out to work the ground from which he came? No, he sent him out to punish him. Right? He sent him out because he did something wrong. Yes, he was punished, but, let me just read the Lashon. Achar achet hutzorich lachzor be'arba ruchos ha'olam ulalakit misham nitzosei ha'kedusha. La'avodis ha'adam asher lukach misham means, as opposed to just building a citadel of Kedusha in Gan Eden, you now have to go and scrounge around to find the Kedusha and to bring it back. And you have to go through nisyonos and difficult times, and it's not going to be so easy to gather up these mitzvos of Kedusha. Right? Now, says the Sakhachava as follows, had man still been connected to God on the highest level when he went out there, he wouldn't be able to go down into the mud and to bring up the mitzvos of Kedusha. So for this new mission, that meant getting down and getting dirty and bringing the Kedusha and finding it, Vayigarish es ha'adam, that's what the Taka said, that the Ribbono Shel Olam not only had to send him physically out of Gan Eden, but had to sever to some extent the chibur, the connection between him and Adam Harisha, between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Adam Harishon, so as to give man the tools to be able to gather up this Kedusha. Now, he says as follows, right? I want to pick out, it's a long piece, I just want to pick out some of the things as follows. Let's understand based on this the role that the Eitz HaChaim plays in this whole drama. Let's send him out of Gan Eden because he might eat from the Eitz HaChaim. Shinir me'akosov shimikodem lo ne'esar olav Eitz HaChaim ad ochlo me'eitz hadas. Right? It sounds like that until man ate from the Eitz Hadas, there was no issur to eat from the Eitz HaChaim. The Eitz HaChaim only really gets mentioned over here. How come the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't say to man from the get-go, Mikol Eitz Hagan Tochel, V'pri Eitz Hadas Tov Ara Lo Tochel Mimenu, and by the way, don't eat from the Eitz HaChaim either. Right? How come the Eitz HaChaim is only mentioned over here at the end? Says the Shem Yishmuel, because the truth is, initially there was no problem eating from the Eitz HaChaim.
They both weighted on the same level.
What's that?
Eitz HaChaim and Eitz Hadas, were they both weighted on the same level?
I know what that means.
Like equally as bad or whatever.
Eitz HaChaim is the tree of life. So what does it mean, the tree of life?
Yeah.
So normally we understand, well, you eat from it, you live forever.
But which one is the worst one to eat from?
They're different. Right? So how do you understand Eitz HaChaim? So he says as follows. Miteva Eitz HaChaim lahashpia ba'odom dveikus b'Hashem yisparach shehu achayim ha'amitiyim. Eitz HaChaim, it's not just a potion of life. Who was it? Magellan? It was Ponce de Leon, right? Ponce de Leon, right? Okay. Yeah, so some of my history comes back, right? You know, it's not just an elixir of life, you know, that if you eat from the Eitz HaChaim, oh, you live forever. No, that's a simplistic understanding of the Eitz HaChaim. Eitz HaChaim means that you cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you eat from the Eitz HaChaim. You get the real Chayim, right? It's the Chayim Amitim, the true life. Hippuch Eitz Hadas Shenafan Bodas Chisonis. The Eitz Hadas just gave him the illusion of understanding. It's a very interesting pshat. You know, the Eitz Hadas gave man the illusion of understanding. It actually put the Eitz Sahara into man. Right? Now he thinks that he understands. The Eitz Hachayim is the connection to true life. So before man ate from the Eitz Hadas, of course there was no problem eating from the Eitz Hachayim. Why? Because when man was in Gan Eden, the Eitz Hachayim represented exactly what his tachlis was supposed to be, clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But now that man ate from the Eitz Hadas, and now that man is driven out of Gan Eden, and now that man has a totally different tachlis in this world, which is not to build up Kedusha, but to go running around the world, scrounging up the Nitzotzos HaKedusha from all over and bringing them over. So to eat from the Eitz Hachayim would undo Vayigaresh Esa'adah. Vayigaresh Esa'adah means God severs that connection between himself and Adam HaRishon. He says, Adam HaRishon, you're out on your own. You know, you no longer have that connection to Chayim Amitiyim. So says the Ribbono Shel Olam, now he can't eat from the Eitz HaChayim anymore. Because the Eitz HaChayim essentially will put him back into Gan Eden. Will put him back in that state, into that state of affairs where he was totally clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And now man changed the rules of the game. Once you change the rules of the game, no backsies. You know, you can't re-change the rules of the game back to the way they were before. In Kenim Yochal Me Eitz HaChayim, Lo Yiskaresh Od, Lo Yeefshar Lo Lelaki Tzchelki Akdusha Kanal Shezoi Tachlis Briyosa. If he eats from the Eitz HaChayim now, he's gonna change the rules of the game. He's gonna be thrown out. He's not gonna be able to function now that he's, you know, outside of Gan Eden. And now he says as follows: Umimotza Hadover Shekol Ashiluach Mi Gan Eden VaHagerushin Einon LaOnesh Rak LaTikun. Shabilti Efshar Biladov. Right? You should understand now that man being chased out of Gan Eden is not, I would say, merely a punishment. He says it's not a punishment at all. I don't know if you can say it's not a punishment at all. But, you know, it's not merely a punishment, but it's a tikkun. You know, now that he's changed his fundamental nature, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, I have a new plan for you. Let's go to plan B. Plan B is that instead of building up the Kedusha, you go out there in the world and you find the Kedusha and you scrounge it, you know, you bring it from all the four corners, and for that you can't eat from the Eitz HaChayim anymore, because that will put you back in Gan Eden, and you know, it's too late to put you back in Gan Eden again. Yeah, I left you on the side before. I just wanted to finish the thought. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
The question is, before there's the difference between the two words Shlichus and Gerush.
Yeah.
Is Shlichus more stringent than Gerush?
So I don't know if the question of more stringent, less stringent. In other words, the way he's teaching, Shiluchin means that he's physically exiled. Gerushin means that the connection is severed. You know, one is a physical displacement, the other is a spiritual displacement.
Moshe Rabbeinu Mitzrayim Shalach Hasamim Ve'Yachuni. Wasn't that a verbal command to send my people out, and Gerushuni is a physical where you actually chase someone away from you?
Right, so, but actually it works well in terms of the context of Mitzrayim, because when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Pyre and says, Shalach Amivi Avduni, he's basically...
isn't both physical, one is a verbal, at least as I understood, he's telling Pyre, send my people away.
That's physical.
That was physical, or was it?
In other words, change their address, right? In other words, they no longer are going to live in Mitzrayim.
Order people to leave. And the Gerushuni is actually physically...
No. I think that would actually fit in very well with the Shem Mishmol. Shalach Amivi Avduni, send them out of Mitzrayim. Right? Now, when God speaks to Moshe right before the Yetzias Mitzrayim, he says, Kishalcho kala garish yigarish eschem izeh, which is a funny pasuk. When he sends you out, he will drive you out. Yeah, of course.
He gives the orders to send you
okay.
out.
You could type like that. I think the Shem Yishvul would say, Kedarko, Kishalcho, when he sends you out physically, Kala Garish Yigarish Eschem Yizeh, he will sever the connection between yourselves and Mitzrayim fundamentally.
Where is the Shuvah in this case? Why didn't he have an opportunity
Gavaldik. Yeah. Okay. So where's tshuva coming over here? So listen to the following. And again, this is still 1913. There's a little bit 1914 to discuss also. I'll try to be makatzer. I know we don't have everybody here all night. But he quotes the medrash. This is another medrash that he's going to come back to. Ve'ata pen yishlach yodo, the pasuk says. Right? No, so, you know, now, lest he stretch forth his hand. Now, first of all, the word ve'ato is a little bit strange. Now, says Hashem, I'm afraid he's going to take from the Eitz HaChayim. So, first of all, it fits in with what the Shem Yishmol said a few moments ago, that the fear of his taking from the Eitz HaChayim is only something which comes about now, because previously, before the sin of the Eitz HaDas, had he taken from the Eitz HaChayim, it wouldn't have been a problem. It would have been just fine. Right? But now, you know, now we have a problem that's going to come from the Eitz HaChayim. Says the Medrash, the Ata is a lashon of tshuva. The Ata Yisrael, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shalom Eimachim Liyuris Hashem Elokecha. So the Ata Penishlach Yodo means a lashon of tshuva. Yeah, so what does that mean? What do those words mean? Right? So he says, Hainu Sheze atzmo shelo yochal me'etz hachayim kidei sheyiskaimu bo agerushin zoi hatshuva. Man is now given an opportunity. God just said, by the way, I'm severing my connection with you and I'm throwing you out of Gan Eden. But by the way, there is this tree that if you eat from its fruit, you'll be fine and you'll bring back things to the way they were beforehand. Man is now faced with a choice. He could eat from the Eitz HaChayim and, at least in his mind, undo all the damage, or he can accept the Gzeirah of Hashem. Man chooses to accept the Gzeirah of Hashem and does not eat from the Eitz HaChayim, and his choice to accept God's Gzeirah is an opportunity for him to do tshuva. That's the Shem Yishmol says. Yeah, and he writes as follows, and the truth is, it's a very... Umikan tshuva lahamisonenim al hamenios. When people complain in life that I have this problem and that problem and this is getting in my way and that's getting in my way, and you complain about all the tsaris you have, they should look at the example of Adam Arisha. Should tzrichim lahavin ulehaskil shezeh kol tikuna. Learn from the example of Adam Arisha that what you think is a punishment is actually your tikkun. It's now your mission. Utsrichim lekabel zeh be'ahava. And you have to accept this mission with love, even though the Ribbono Shel Olam is slapping you, so to speak, left and right, as part of this mission. The test of Adam Arishon is to not take from the Eitz HaChayim and to accept the gzeirah that was placed upon him, and by doing so, that in its own right affords him the opportunity to do tshuva. Now let's try, I want to try in the next couple of minutes, a lot of ideas that here, I want to try to bring everything kind of together and to do it in a time sensitive fashion, so wish me luck. That was 1911 we saw. 1911 where he talks about man being driven out only Motzei Shabbos, even though the sin was Erev Shabbos, and Shabbos protects him from eating from the Eitz HaChayim. 1913, he develops this idea that the Gerushin was good for man, in a sense. In other words, yeah, it was a punishment, but it was actually his tikkun, in a certain sense, and his failure to take from the Eitz HaChayim is actually a form of tshuva that he engages in. Comes 1914. I think it's 1914. One second. That's a little later. 1915. And he says as follows. 1915, the Shem Yishmol goes back. Sorry, 1916. Sorry. 1916. Right. Mamish, literally, you know, 100 years ago. Literally 100 years ago. Right? In other words, it's probably 1915, meaning it's Tof Resh Ayin Vav, Parshas Breishis, which was 1915, right? In other words, so literally 100 years ago, what's that? Exactly, literally 100 years ago, The Shemi Shmuel says as follows. He revisits the Medrash. The first Medrash we spoke about, how the Ribbono Shel Olam drove man out on Motzei Shabbos, and the Kasha of the Yafei Toah. Why was he driving man out Motzei Shabbos? Wasn't he afraid the whole Shabbos that he would take from the Eitz HaChaim? He also revisits the Medrash about Tshuva, where the Medrash says that God gave Adam Arishon the opportunity to do Tshuva when he said, V'ata pen yishlach yoda. What does that mean? So here he says as follows. He reiterates this idea. He reiterates this idea or he says as follows. Originally, God did not tell Adam Arishon anything about the Eitz HaChaim and its function. The first time God tells man about the Eitz HaChaim is that Motzei Shabbos, right, when he's on the way, when he's ready to drive him out. He only let him in on the secret of the Eitz HaChaim, you know, right after they finished davening Ma'ariv, that first Motzei Shabbos. That's when he brought out the idea of the Eitz HaChaim. Why did he wait till now? If man were to accept upon himself the gzera of death by not eating from the Eitz HaChaim, that would be man's tshuva. And he says it's important for a person to understand ki hachet be'atzmo hu yoser ra umar meha'onesh. You think the punishment for sin is bad? No, the punishment for sin is not so bad. What's bad is the sin itself. V'chol ha'onshim hein bozer v'hein baba hein rak tikunim. Any punishment you get, whether in this world or the next, is a tikkun. And you should be happy to be able to get a tikkun, a rectification, and to somehow do away with the onesh. Ha'lamaza doma? And to do a goet to chet, rather. Lamaza doma, what can this could be compared to? L'chola hanotel amus. You have a person who's deathly ill. Uvo rofe v'nosel osam mar, o mitzavah la'asos yituach v'vesorosh, al yidei trufa zo yichye. Comes a doctor and he prescribes a bitter-tasting medicine for the person to save his life. Hareu mekabel be'avo sam mar zeh. Right? Clearly the patient would say, give me this bitter tasting medicine. He's not going to say, ah, yuck. You know, I'd rather die.
Excuse me, is not the same equivalent.
Yeah.
Because in the case, we said before that they had a choice to go to Eitz HaChaim to overcome their affair. Instead, they chose to suffer in order to do teshuva. Now, this case of the doctor, the similar case, as I understand it, is the person is sick and dying. The doctor is coming to him and say, look, I have a medicine that will cure you. Take the medicine. And the person is saying, this punishment of me dying and suffering is my tikkun for olam haba. You keep the medicine.
No, so that's not exactly the mashal. The way he's presenting the mashal is as follows. He's saying, the patient dying is the equivalent of the chait itself, the stain upon the person's neshama, right? If a person really understood that chait stains the person's neshama, he would accept any kind of suffering out there to cleanse the neshama, even if in the short term that suffering seems to be terrible, because the suffering is far better than the agony of having the neshama stained forever, evermore. So in other words, the short term pain of the medicine, or he gives another example, an operation, you know, where the person is going to undergo short-term pain in order to save his life, is the equivalent of undergoing yisurim, even for an extended period of time, which will wipe away the chait forever and ever in the Olam HaEmes.
Eating from the from Eitz HaChaim.
Yeah.
Is that short term or is that forever?
No, it's well, it's pretty long term, but
it's eternity. So how do you compare it to someone you say you're going to suffer the short term suffering? My point is it's long term.
Right.
Not similar.
Right. It's long term, but you know his point is as follows, and again it's an abstract concept for us to get, but the sin incurred through the eating of the Eitz Hadas is so grievous that you need the punishment of death in order to eradicate it. Now, yeah.
Doesn't life give us more about putting to do tshuva? You want life, you ask for life.
Right.
In order to get, either a person is death, and he has another moment to them,
right.
In order to have more time to do possibly another mitzvah. So why should he be willing to give up long-term life?
Right. So, under normal circumstances, I would agree with you. Here, the concept of mortality was God's response to the Eitz Hadas. So, you know, that apparently is something that.
The choice is his, really. It's his choice. Why take life?
Right, because God is saying the tikkun that you need is to embrace mortality.
I don't give you a choice then.
Right. I hear. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Ah, okay, so now he's going to get mitzvahs by virtue of...
He can't do anything.
Right.
Right now, I know if I'm...
Interesting.
There.
Aram and Amitzvahs, right.
So since I don't have any mitzvahs, there's nothing for... It's... you can go on with it, but for what? What are you going to do? You have no mission statement.
Interesting.
That's why you set the goals.
Right, so that's the previous thing, right. The new mission statement. Had he stayed, he wouldn't have had it. He would have been betwixt and between. He wouldn't have had a mission statement. What there? Right. I hear. Let's just draw it together because I want to try to put it together. So he says in 1915. So he says as follows. So God only reveals the role of the Eitz HaChaim Motzei Shabbos. Right, to basically give man the choice: are you going to eat it, or are you not going to eat it? Right, if you don't eat it, it's going to constitute tshuva. But then it says the Shem Yishvul, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm not 100% sure what choice man is going to make. Let me drive him out, right, so that he's not overly tempted to make the wrong choice, and thus undo his tshuva. Now, again, there's a lot to think about over here, but what I really want to just point out with this will conclude is the following. A lot of the same mekoros from year to year, somewhat different ways of putting those mekoros together from 1911 to 1910, right? 1910, 1912 and 1915, somewhat different ways of putting together, the Medrash about being driven out Motzei Shabbos, the idea of the Eitz HaChaim and the role that it plays, the tshuva involved in the Eitz HaChaim, right? Each presentation is similar and they're mashlim one another, I think, but, there is a slightly different presentation each time, different parts of the whole in terms of his focus. So it's very, again, each one a fascinating presentation in its own right, but each one a little bit of a different way of working with the same makaros. Yeah.
I just want to say before that according to everything he said, the plan A, the plan B, I think what we ask for, the hand came hard, and what we hint to in Kaddish is that we're hoping that ultimately come back to the original plan.
Right. The Ramchal writes that Beferish in his Sfarim that the hope is to basically make it back to Gan Eden. That's where we're headed for ultimately. Okay, just in terms of scheduling, so next week, God willing, we're going to have the same schedule Thursday night after Mayriv. But Derech Klal, again, we'll be back to the Wednesday night following Mayriv schedule. But next week is Thursday night after Mayriv, and thereafter, God willing, I will be back to the Wednesday night schedule. I wish everybody a good Shabbos.